What's trending? DeSantis.
We got the alert a little before noon, something like 11:50 our time, that Governor Ron DeSantis officially filed his paperwork to run for the president. He is going to do an interview later on tonight on Fox News. So it's a pretty big deal. It's great news for, I think, Republicans. This is going to lead to a lot of infighting, but we've known that Ron DeSantis is running for president for a while. It's not wasn't exactly a secret. And we know that Donald Trump sees him as the biggest threat, and the media sees him as the biggest threat. The media sees Ron DeSantis as a bigger threat than Donald Trump because they've already proven to themselves that they could beat Donald Trump, that they could put all of their resources into attacking him, into smearing him for months and months and months on end while providing some PR for Joe Biden. And they know it's going to be a little bit more difficult from a left-wing media perspective to support Joe Biden this time around, regardless of who he's going up against, because he has a record now, and the record is poor. He's very, very old. People are thinking about that. And the vice president, Kamala Harris, does not engender any kind of confidence that she could do the job. No one thinks she could do the job. Literally, there's no one who thinks she could do the job of president. She's incredibly, incredibly incompetent. But they still think that they could defeat Donald Trump because he is a criminal and a fascist. He's mean. He's insulting. But with Ron DeSantis, he's got a really, really, really positive record in Florida. There's some people who want to pretend that that's not the case. There's some people who want to pretend that he is ruining Florida and that it is so bad it's dangerous for black people to go there, gay people to go there. I was just in Florida not too long ago. It was fine. No one shamed me for being gay and Jewish, I assure you. So Ron DeSantis makes the announcement. He made the announcement in the last hour. And what was curious was some of the preemptive complaints about Ron DeSantis announcing on Twitter. You had Jen Psaki, the former White House press secretary, coming out on MSNBC and just unironically slamming him.
And the decision they made was to have him on an audio-only platform. Only 20% of the country has access to or really plays in, mostly coastal.
I love that. Mostly coastal, says the coastal elitist. The Democrat Party is the party of coastal elites. Now, she clearly misspoke a little bit at the top. She didn't mean to say only 20% have access to Twitter, because that's obviously not true. Anyone who has a phone or an internet connection in this country has access to Twitter, and that's obviously more than 20%. But what she means is about 20% of the country actively use Twitter, and that's certainly true. But going on Twitter and making your announcement, part one of making your announcement, is, I think, important because it gets a lot of buzz. It gets people talking, and people will respond in real time on Twitter because they're hearing about it on Twitter. Versus going and making a speech on TV, you're going to get someone who's watching it on TV and then has to go onto Twitter to comment, right? And this is all about getting the name out. This is all about creating some momentum and buzz. But when you do it on the platform in which people will give you that buzz, it makes it a lot easier for more people and more likely for more people to actually write about it, tweet about it, get excited about it. And of course, he's going to suffer a lot of attacks on Twitter, but he's going to trend. And at some point, you look at that and say, hey, I just want to make sure people know that I'm running for president. And when they look up my name, they'll be able to find my website and they'll be able to find the positions I take. But to accuse him of being a coastal elitist from Jen Psaki or from anyone on MSNBC is hysterical.
Guy who, by the way, is not expanding his own base of support and is also not doing anything to help with the awkwardness because he's awkward, too. So I'm not sure the conversation went exactly that way. But I don't fully understand the Twitter piece other than to say Twitter is sort of how Ron DeSantis, because people weren't seeing him in person, because he wasn't interacting with humans, how he kind of got himself on the national maps.
It's so dumb. It's just so dumb. This is not a good faith take. And then you got Whoopi Goldberg on The View. First of all, they loathe Ron DeSantis. It's showing you how little they know about politics every time they speak about him. But Whoopi was especially upset.
He was I don't understand. I didn't know what he was saying. And look, you know what? This idea of announcing on Twitter, I I'm old and I'm okay being old. Do that on television, okay?
Well,
I want to see you do it on television. I want to see you actually take real Americans' questions. That's what I want.
Okay, so she wants to pretend, I guess, that presidential announcements are done in front of live audiences, town hall style, where people of different political perspectives get to immediately start to ask questions. What world is she living in? Seriously, in what world does she live in which she's pretending that that's how things are done? That's never how it's done. I'm unaware of anyone doing it the way that she just described it. So she might be old, but she doesn't have a great memory of any of the elections that she's lived through, which I think is like 40 elections she's lived through. And that she doesn't know this is actually quite astonishing, or at least pretending not to know it. Number two, he is making his announcement on TV as well. He's doing an interview on Fox News Tonight. Trey Gowdy is hosting. He is undoubtedly going to get leading news coverage pretty much everywhere. All the national outlets are going to play audio or show video of the Twitter moderation. They're going to make sure that their viewership knows about it. So it's getting on TV that way. The interview he's doing on Fox News will be repurposed. And he'll eventually do interviews with even more media outlets, including the ones that are hostile to him. It's very difficult to get away with not at least trying to engage on CNN. He probably is extremely unlikely to go on MSNBC, although I would like to see that because I think he's so much smarter than everyone there. But he'll likely go on CNN. We heard today that Nikki Haley agreed to a town hall with CNN the same way as Donald Trump did. Now, it's going to happen on June 4th, so coming up. It'll be in Iowa. And June 4th, I believe, is a weekend. So what's curious is how people are going to respond. So I've already seen an article from the Daily Beast saying CNN to follow up with Trump disaster with Nikki Haley town hall. The Trump town hall was not a disaster. It was a ratings boon for them. They didn't get to maintain it because still people don't like CNN and they're not doing enough to keep them tuned in after the main event. And that's due to their just bad faith and pretty shoddy post town hall analysis that is very, very far to the left. Now, will Nikki Haley get the same exact reaction? Probably not. I can't imagine people are going to be legitimately or even pretend to be upset about Nikki Haley being on a town hall. Like there's nothing controversial about her. Unless you're just a complete and total ideological bigot and you don't want to see conservative thought ever be espoused on CNN, which, by the way, is why they're doing so poorly in the ratings. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
In Ballard yesterday, a neighborhood in Seattle, we saw an RV, a homeless RV, pretty much explode. It is pretty remarkable, and it was actually caught on video. It happened yesterday afternoon. We saw video being shared on social media. It showed an RV that goes up in flames, and these were pretty significant flames. There was a plume of black smoke that we could see from here in Eastlake neighborhood of Seattle. SFD, Seattle Fire, they were able to get there pretty quickly. They put the fire out. Thankfully, no one was injured, and they're looking as to what started the fire. We do know that a woman living in one of the broken-down RVs across the street spoke with Como TV, and she said she could even feel the fire, the heat from the fire, inside of her own trailer, which is just absolutely nuts. Abigail lives nearby. She spoke with Como. She was the first one, apparently, to witness the fire.
Well, I was in my trailer just across the street from the one that caught on fire, and I had someone bang on my door and start yelling, I need a fire extinguisher.
Absolutely nuts. Now, again, I'm going to ask a question. Is anyone surprised? You might be shocked, right? An RV that explodes, catches fire like that, you're going to be shocked because the images are shocking. But are you surprised? Now, anyone who's familiar with the Ballard neighborhood of Seattle, it used to be a total pigsty. It got cleaned up a little bit, and now it's become a pigsty again. Because they are at the city level allowing the encampments to develop, the RVs to be parked wherever it is they want to park. They're broken down. They're dangerous. And they're housing homeless people who are in desperate need of help. Are you shocked that there was an explosion at a homeless, broken down, dangerous RV? Probably not. Probably not surprised. And unfortunately, more and more people are stepping up and realizing, hey, I guess this is what happens when we are permissive of this kind of homelessness crisis. And I say over and over and over again that individuals have to personally experience or know someone who personally experiences any one of the crises that we're talking about before they finally change their minds.
It's concerning when you see that sort of thing happening where you work and where you live.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I don't know why it took this guy. And again, I don't know John. But let's just assume he's like every other Seattleite who stays silent. Maybe they're starting to think, oh, things aren't headed in the right direction. But God forbid I say anything because I don't want to be bullied by progressives, by progressive activists who will dox me, who will call me out, who will say I lack compassion to the homeless crisis. They're people, too. They're just like you and me. But I'm willing to bet that this is the first time he's speaking out in a big way. Most of these people are speaking out for the first time. Because now they've been personally impacted, and it's not the same as driving by an encampment, even if it's close to your home. But when you've got an explosion, something that's truly dangerous, and it's happening on your block or around the corner, or it's happening at a park that you take your kids to, all of a sudden, you take it a little bit more seriously. Here's another neighbor.
It was like a missile has hit Ballard. It was so bad. And wow. I could see the fire actually was on the wires also, on the power wires. That was terrifying.
Yeah, no kidding. That would terrify any of us. And just like John, he doesn't like what his neighborhood is becoming.
I really like to see a solution for this because it's affecting us. It's not only me and my family. It's the entire neighborhood.
100% correct. Naveed is 100% correct. It is impacting your entire neighborhood. Welcome to the fight, the political fight, because this is a political problem. It's not really even a homelessness crisis. It's not a drug crisis. It's a Democrat policy crisis. Because when you allow things to get this bad, you are making a choice. And the longer it goes before you clean up whatever the issue is, whether it's drug use, crime, or homelessness, the longer you wait, the harder it's going to be to fully treat. To fully tackle, to fully fix, because they've got momentum on their side, on the homelessness side. There's a snowball. Homelessness begets more homelessness. And you only have so many resources, and there's not a whole lot of political will in the mayor's office to do anything about it. And certainly you're not going to wait for the council because you only got two council members who seem to care about this stuff. So consider this. Here's the glass half full approach. We just heard from two new people. I'm not counting the homeless woman, but you just found two new people who I'm willing to bet are going to take this next election a little bit more seriously. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Everyone is a hero.
This might be my favorite story of the day. It involves Cori Bush, and for once, we're not going to bash her for being anti-cop, although, of course, she is, in fact, anti-cop. But we're going to listen to her as she tries to discuss why she is a supporter of a gas stove ban, the issue that we were told was not actually going to occur. Remember that? Remember when Fox News had the report and they were citing a Biden official who was actively talking about banning gas stoves or putting severe restrictions on them at a time when individual cities and states have been doing it or have been trying to. And yet we were told by the media that it was completely made up. No one is coming for your gas stoves. No one is coming for your gas stoves. It is a fiction. It is a narrative created by the MAGA Republicans. And you and I, of course, we always knew that to be nonsense. And of course, it was nonsense. It wasn't fiction. It was real. It's happening all across the country. And it's going to happen here in a big way, that when you have new construction, they're not going to allow you to have a gas hookup. And they're going after stoves for now. And the new spin here is to say it's not even about banning gas stoves. It's about, you know, regulating indoor air pollution. Huh, Cori Bush?
This proposed rule is not a ban on gas stoves.
It is, though.
This proposed rule is not a ban on gas stoves.
No, you said that, but it is.
We are regulating indoor air pollution.
By banning gas stoves. I mean, that's, you are, in fact, banning gas stoves. You're not going to go into homes that currently have them and then rip them out, but you're banning them for future use. That's what a ban is. This whole idea that, oh no, it's about indoor air quality. People know that that's nonsense. No one's falling for that. Because we've had stoves for, you know, quite a while. And only suddenly, at the same time that you're pushing us away from gasoline-powered vehicles, putting us into EVs, at the exact same time, you are now telling us that gas stoves are bad and you should get an all-electric stovetop. Weird coincidence, don't you think? Kind of just popped out of nowhere. But of course, it has nothing to do with a concerted effort from this administration to get us away from gasoline, to get us away from natural gas, to get us away from everything other than electric vehicles and the sun and wind power. But everyone knows that this is just nonsense. Listen to this argument and tell me it's not just incredibly silly.
I can only imagine the number of my constituents who are unknowingly being poisoned by their gas stoves in the state that it is.
Zero.
Without this proposed rule being in effect.
It's zero.
Especially young children.
Zero.
Our elders.
Zero.
And people with disabilities.
Zero.
Who are disproportionately at risk for contracting respiratory illnesses.
Okay. Weird. It's so odd that despite having these gas stoves for so long, not only did this not come up as an issue, but we've not been able to identify any kind of increase in respiratory illnesses specifically due to gas stoves. Isn't that odd? Wow. You would think that they would be throwing out all this data. When you don't hear data that should be easily available, then they don't have it. Or it doesn't say what they want it to say. It's kind of similar with homelessness. We always hear from these groups about how, give us more money for a tiny home village. It's going to help solve homelessness. Oh, yeah, how many people who go into your tiny home village end up getting their own home that's not subsidized by the government? Crickets. They don't give you that information because it either doesn't exist, because they're not helping anyone, or it directly shows that they're hurting people. Thus, they're not going to put it out there, and the same is true here. If they were able to say, you know what, due to new technology and in science, we're able to determine that 74% of the respiratory illnesses that are, put on young children are due directly to their mothers and fathers cooking on a gas stove in their home. And of course, if there was actually any significant issue with indoor air quality, you've got the fan above your stove or above your cooker, and you can open a window. That's how you would negate any of these issues. And so if they truly cared about this issue and if they truly believed that there is somehow this large risk of indoor air pollution, they would be putting forward an education strategy to tell people to turn on the overhead fan, to tell people to crack a window, if they actually thought that this was truly at risk, even in the interim. Because if they're telling you right now that the gas stove is so dangerous, they got to move forward with a rule that says new construction doesn't include this. If they truly believed that it was that dangerous, wouldn't they tell you, the person who has it in their home, to get it out of the home? Wouldn't they want to just replace them? Why not? Is it okay for the rest of us who currently live in an older building or a building that was, you know, put together before this proposal, and we have a gas stove? For those of you who have gas stoves, I think in Washington State, something like 30 or 40% of people have gas stoves. So they're okay to suffer? Or is it kind of an overstated threat? I'm going with that one. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Finally, just very quickly, let's take you through a decision by the city of Seattle that is going to impact summer for a lot of people. There are lots of folks who don't have access to a pool. Most people don't. And so they go to area beaches. But unfortunately, the Seattle Parks and Recreation is going to close down three of them this summer because they've got a lifeguard shortage. And when I say shortage, oh my God. Last summer, they had 165, but they needed 425. That's pretty significant. And though they didn't give any numbers this year, they say, hey, we're making some progress, but we're still in need. We're improving, but we're still in need. So they're closing three beaches, Magnuson Park Beach, Seward Park Beach, and East Green Lake Beach. I don't even know what East Green Lake Beach is, and I live here. But Rachel Sulkin, communications manager for the Seattle Parks and Recreation, spoke with King 5.
A lot of our lifeguards are new, and so we're not going to put brand new lifeguards on the beach without senior experienced guards help support and train them. And unfortunately, we don't have enough of those, that core of senior experienced guard.
Now, normally, I would just say this is an example of a city that's failing to do something very basic. But then I realized lifeguards here are paid the minimum wage, $19.51 an hour. And generally speaking, lifeguards are younger people. That's the fault of parents, and that's the fault of a society, mostly Democrat thinking, telling kids that they're worth more than that. Telling kids that they don't need to get some of these starter jobs that just give them some experience. And instead, we're telling them, go ahead and live life. Enjoy your summer. There used to be such a thing as a summer job. That kind of has gone away because we're telling kids that they are in desperate need of more leisure time when most of their time is already leisure time. So this is a failure of parents. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show.
Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rantz Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Lynnwood, where a man was shot and killed. A woman he was with was shot and injured when they allegedly tried to steal a truck outside of the Best Western Alderwood. It's right by the Lynnwood Event Center. Happened around 2:30 this morning. A man was staying at the hotel. He said he woke up as he heard what sounded like a diesel truck being started. Turns out it was his. So he looks out, he realizes, yep, it's being stolen. He runs out, he confronts the two alleged thieves and apparently fired his gun at them. Caro 7 TV says Lynnwood officers arrived 2 minutes later to find a large truck with its engine still running. It was resting against the corner of a building and a man was slumped over in the driver's seat. A woman was sitting outside the truck with what appeared to be gunshot wounds. Police say the couple got to the hotel in a stolen car from Burien because, of course. Now, the man, the one who was shot and killed, he's in his 30s. The woman, they didn't give an age, but they say she was shot twice and then taken to a nearby hospital. So she's going to be okay. Now, there's so many different angles to this story. And we should start with the fact that from a legal standpoint, it's going to be a little tricky for this guy, for the shooter. It would certainly be tricky and probably against him in King County. Snohomish County Prosecutor Jason Cummings, much more sane when it comes to this kind of thing. But the question will become, because it'll be a self-defense defense, did you have to shoot him? Did you have to shoot either of these people? Yeah, they stole your car. Awful. But generally, we don't say that that is, I mean, a cop is not going to shoot at someone stealing a car. So why did you shoot them? What happened beyond just catching them steal your car? Was the car about to hit the man? Like they got in, they started to drive off, they were coming after him and he fired? Clearly self-defense. Did they have weapons? Were the weapons brandished? That would clearly be self-defense. Was there reason for him to think either of them had weapons? Reasonably think that. That could also be self-defense. But if it was just seeing them in the car and then firing at them, I don't know if this ends well for this guy. I hope it ends well. Because while I don't think you should shoot people stealing a car, I certainly understand it. I don't think it's right, but I get it. In fact, I've said this before, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, things like this. I'm honestly surprised it doesn't happen more.
And the truth is, from a criminal standpoint, they know, what do they know about cops? They know that they're not going to be able to be pulled over. They can just continue to drive away. They're 90% certain, depending on where it is they're stealing the car, that even if they were to get caught, they're not going to serve any jail time. And if they do, it'll be a weekend. Like, it'll be something very insignificant. So they know that about cops. But if all of a sudden things like this happen, and again, I'm not promoting it, but if this did happen more often, that would be a disincentive. They know cops won't shoot them. But if all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay, I got to be a little bit more careful because the person I'm stealing from, there's been a lot of those stories of them shooting. Now, that also could end poorly, right? That could just encourage the bad guy to carry a gun, which is why, again, it's not like I'm endorsing this, but we're kind of at the point where we need a disincentive. And if the public doesn't think that the cops are disincentives anymore for this to continue, they're going to start acting out on their own. And we've had a few stories in which people were doing this on their own. Not a ton, but we've had a few. And it's possible that that few becomes many, and then a ton. And that does not sound like a safe place to be, because I don't want to just be walking home and just random people shooting at each other because, well, the cops aren't going to do anything. Meanwhile, is his name Iam?
Yeah, I believe so.
Iam Tongi. I don't watch American Idol. I see ads for it, and each time I say to myself, still on? Why? Come on, move on. Well, Iam Tongi won the latest season of American Idol. And the reason why we're talking about him on this show is that he is someone who goes to Decatur High School. So that, you know, he's local. Federal Way. That's, yeah.
Woo! Yeah.
Go, whatever your team mascot is. He got on the show with a rendition of James Blunt's song Monsters. He's saying it in tribute to his late father. I think it's about a father who dies and dealing with it. On the finale, because I know I watched a few seasons, I think, all the way through. I've certainly seen finales. Once you're already in and the voting is done, the last night you just get to basically do a concert. You get, I think, three songs each or two, something like that. And one of them is a duo with a combination of who they can actually book and someone who means something to you. Now, American Idol, because it's seen by a lot of people, it's generally easy to book some folks. I would book a very low-key band that no one's ever heard of just to give them some love. I do the Giant Rooks. That's what I would do. See, do you know who they are?
I do, actually. That's a good pull.
It's a great pull. Their album is outstanding. I didn't realize people knew who they were because I found them completely by accident. And then I was in a Starbucks and I heard them play. I was like, oh, maybe it's not as cool to like them. How about Leoniden?
No.
Okay, I would go with Leoniden. They're all the bands I'm listening to right now are all German. I have no idea why. It's rather ironic, but they're all German. So he goes and performs during the finale. He gets James Blunt or James Blunt. Yeah, James is Blunt. Is that the album name? They're there and they're singing and they're all crying at the end of the song. And everyone in the audience is crying just because we want to make people at home feel uncomfortable. Let's see if this kid can sing. I don't like it.
Oh.
Let's turn off our music.
Before they don't ruin it. Off all the lights,
is this Iam or James?
I won't read it's honestly hard to tell.
Who is it?
I think this is James.
The time is gone. I'll tell you goodnight.
Okay, so that's got to be Iam. Because he's not as good.
Tell you I love you once more. Time is gone.
Oh, stop clapping. He's trying to sing.
So here it is. I'm not your son.
That's James.
You're not my father. We're just two grown men saying goodbye.
Doesn't rhyme.
No need to forgive. No need to forget. I know your mistakes and you know mine. And while you're sleeping, I'll try to make you proud.
Okay.
So, Daddy, won't you just close your eyes?
Do I have to listen to the whole thing?
If you want.
I don't. It's, you know, it's okay. Not really my cup of tea. It's, you know, good for him. I feel like I could do better if I'm being totally upfront. People don't realize that I am also a singer and I play guitar.
I was wondering why you had that guitar in there.
Well, now you're going to find out. I'm going to actually perform acoustic and I'm going to prove to the world that I am way better. What's his name? Than Iam Tongi. And American Idol, you can be any age. Even pretend 28, I can go.
That
so turn
out.
Down the music for a second. Let me grab, hold on. Let me get my... I got to move the microphone here. Let me get this other microphone. Hold on 1 second. Okay. You think this is going to pick up?
Yeah, I think it'll work.
Okay.
Really good.
While so calm and all these hearts
really get into character.
From self-control, your legs are smooth as they graze mine. We're doing fine. We're doing nothing at all. My hopes are so high that your kiss might kill me. So won't you kill me? So I die happy.
See?
Wow.
Told you.
That was good.
I bet you didn't think I could hit some of those notes.
When the hook came, I was a little bit surprised.
Right? You were a little wondering, because you know that song. It's, of course, a Dashboard Confessional song that I just did. Was I not better?
You were better. You were better than the guy that won.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I have range, by the way.
And you're not from Federal Way.
Exactly. I'm representing Brooklyn, I guess. Well, technically Porter Ranch, California, but also now Seattle. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. But I have range. And something tells me that, what's his name? Iam Tongi? He doesn't have range. He can do the James Blunt songs, right? But right there, I just did sort of almost an emo, because it's Dashboard Confessional. So it's a little bit of an emo song. But I can even do some old school vocals. So can I do one more time?
Yeah, if you want to. Sure, we got a little bit of time.
I feel like people are impressed. Hold on, let me get this set up again. Okay, it's set up.
It's so boring. A lot can change in 20 seconds. A lot can happen in the dark. Love when it makes you lose your bearings. Some information's not for sharing. There's different names at hotel check-ins. It's hard to stop it once it starts.
That was good. If I don't say so myself.
I was impressed. That is range. By definition, that's range.
100%. You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen. But please, let's congratulate Iam Tongi. Because he can play one song well. He doesn't have the vocal stylings of Jason Rance. That's all I'm saying. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to sing me your praises via text message. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, you pick the news. Story number one, Target is holding an emergency meeting over some of their LGBTQ merchandise because they want to avoid a quote-unquote Bud Light situation. Or Hunter Biden mistress asks court to jail president's son over custody court battle. Which story should I discuss? Send me your answer. 1-800-465-8770.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rance Show.
Indeed you do, and you are allowing me to discuss what Fox News is saying are emergency meetings that are being handled at different Target locations, concerned that they're going to find themselves in a Bud Light situation. And it all stems from a number of videos, mostly shared on TikTok, but I've seen a lot on Twitter. I'm starting to see a lot more on Twitter around LGBTQ-themed clothing for children. Now, I've seen some people complain about what I don't think is a big deal. They show like an LGBT pride shirt for kids. And while I understand that some people might think that that is trying to encourage kids to be gay, number one, you're born gay. You can't just be encouraged to be gay. The gender identity confusion 100% is something that can be pushed on people. But we are heading into Gay Pride Month. And if you've got like two dads or two mothers, if you've got a family member who is lesbian or gay or whatever, I imagine that's what those shirts are truly intended for. That's my guess. And there is nothing wrong with having a shirt that has rainbow colors, that has a message that says that they support the LGBT community. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think. There is, however, something wrong, in my view, with, especially with kids, selling them, quote unquote, tuck-friendly bathing suits. Tucking the... You get it?
I do. Yeah. It was on the TV screen in one of the last segments, and you used the phrase tucked in in reference to something else, and I laughed.
I did that intentionally.
I know.
Some Southern Target stores, according to Fox News, were forced by the corporation to move LGBTQ pride merchandise away from the front of their locations after customer outrage in order to avoid a quote-unquote Bud Light situation. They say many Target locations across the country feature massive June Pride Month displays on an annual basis, with items this year ranging from tuck-friendly bathing suits for transgender people to mugs that say gender fluid. But the retail juggernaut has been criticized by some conservatives for the displays, with children's items particularly irking many customers. One insider from Target told Fox News that mostly in rural areas, a bunch of locations had to relocate their pride sections because they wanted to avoid getting caught up in any of the culture war issues. They say that there were, quote unquote, emergency calls on Friday of last week that some managers and senior directors for districts were told, hey, why don't we chill out a little bit? You do realize where you're located. Yeah, this is not the middle of Seattle. This is not a Target in the Castro district. Why don't you pull it in just a little bit. Tuck it in just a little bit with some of this nonsense. You're going a little bit over the top there. The insider said, we were given 36 hours, told to take all of our pride stuff, the entire section, and move it into a section that's a third the size. From the front of the store to the back of the store, you can't have anything on mannequins and no large signage. We call our customers guests. There's outrage on their part. This year, it's just exponentially more than any other year. I think given the current situation with Bud Light, the company is terrified of a Bud Light situation. They say this individual has apparently worked at Target for two decades, which indicates there's some level of seniority. I'm assuming it's a manager, maybe in senior management for a district or a region. This person said the Target rarely makes such hasty decisions. And yet this 10-minute emergency call was all about, quote unquote, how to deal with team member safety, because they fear that some of the backlash could lead to violence, which is, it's true that it can lead to violence. And that is a disgusting position for anyone who's outraged by any of this. To get violent is disgusting. It's not called for. It's never justified, no matter how disgusting you might find some of this material being sold. And I get why people are uncomfortable. I'm looking right now at an image of one of the swimsuits, the pride themed swimsuits. One is set, it says it's tuck friendly construction, but also extra crotch coverage. So if you are a transgender female who has not gone through any kind of surgical procedure, so you're still intact,
they're giving you a little bit of extra space because I don't know if you're familiar with women's bathing suits, but on the below the belt portion is usually there's not a lot of material because you don't have that much mass that you're covering up when you're a biological woman. But if you're a male, do we have to go through this or you know the rest?
I think I can figure this one out.
So they have,
I appreciate the thoroughness.
There's a little bit more that they call crotch coverage, which I thought when I saw that first, I thought it was a joke. I thought they were just making that language up to explain it. No, it's on there. It's literally on the tag. The insider says the call was super quick. It was 15 minutes. The first 10 minutes was about how to keep your team safe and not having to advocate for Target. The last five was, quote, move this to the back, take down the mannequins, and remove the signage. Said the bathing suits have been replaced. And they've just been taken out. It's all under the guise of trying to increase swim sales. Everyone was like, thank God, we're on the front lines dealing with this. Now, that part's kind of interesting to me. Right now and into all of next month, there's going to be corporation after corporation after corporation coming out the way that they did with BLM, claiming that they are big supporters of the LGBT community, that they wear pride on their sleeves. Look, a literal pride sticker on my sleeve. Like they're going to be doing that because they want to increase sales. That's it. They don't care about the issue. They might have people who are supporters. They might have others who are not. They might have some who just don't care. But ultimately, this is about increasing sales, and that's it. And the companies that only do it, who only take these positions and make these proclamations and sell these products during late May into all of June, and then afterward, they just completely go away, then you know exactly where they stand, which is, I just want to take your money. I'm jumping into a cause. That's it. I'm virtue signaling, and we hope to make some money off of it. And that's where the danger is. Because that's what happened with Bud Light. And that's why you've got some people who are concerned in Target leadership, wondering what's going to happen next. The reason why Bud Light had the reaction that it had was because it was out of the ordinary. It's not something that they normally would promote, Dylan Mulvaney. Target doesn't normally do this except for one time a year. And that's what they're doing here at a precarious time when it comes to the culture wars, and they likely will get punished for this. How much? I don't know. I don't know what the loyalty is to Target versus what it was to Bud Light. But I was surprised by what happened with Bud Light. So let's see what happens here with Target. And as importantly, let's see what happens moving forward with all the other companies that are just jumping for some attention during Pride Month. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rant Show.